ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have seen how Ajatashatru wanted to teach about the supreme reality to his apt disciple, Gargya. And the nearest human example to understand the real nature of Brahman, it is not exactly the real nature of Brahman, but the nearest example is deep sleep. As we have seen, in deep sleep, one special power of ignorance called Vikshepa Shakti totally disappears. So we have seen the story. Ajatashatru takes Gargya by hand and then goes to a sleeping man. First he calls him, then he touches him mildly, then he shakes him violently, and then only the man woke up. And that is all the incident. But the lessons to be derived from that incident are these. So first of all, when the person is addressed by some words, titles, O Rama, O Krishna, and if the person is in the waking state, and that is the characteristic of waking state. If somebody says, I am awake, but doesn't hear his name being repeatedly called, then he is not really awake. So, every waking person is completely conscious of his sense organs, his body, the world, and immediately he should respond. But this man did not respond. Then he shook him mildly, which indicates he is not even, not only he was not in the waking state, he was not even in the dream state. Why? Because dream is also very near to waking state. And in both in waking and dream, the two distracting, covering up powers of Maya, that is Avarana Shakti, which is the covering of our true nature, Vikshepa Shakti, making us think reality is something else. These two powers, the most powerful power of distracting our knowledge, covering up our knowledge is better, but distracting our knowledge, we have two obstacle courses to run. So in deep sleep, where the person is not aware of the world, therefore he is not in the waking, therefore his sense organs do not work. And in dream state, subtle sense organs do work, but mild shaking did not wake him up. Then Ajatashatru violently shook, and by that, the deep sleep had broken, and the man woke up. So that third state is the state which is going to be described. It is not to say the description of the third state, Sushupti, is equivalent to the truth of Brahman, but it is the nearest. How is it nearest? First of all, there is no reality. The person doesn't feel reality. Secondly, his samskaras do not actually work. Thirdly, a person is absorbed nearest to Brahman. He is absorbed in that warm presence of Brahman, which is his own nature. That is to say, it is my nature, your nature, everybody's nature, even the nature of an inert matter, a stone, etc. Many times we are unconsciously use the examples of river, forest, from the western point of view, that is accepted, are all inert. But even if you say it is a forest, it is not inert. Every plant is alive. Every microbe is alive. But if it comes to rivers, if it comes to stars, if it comes to stones, then it is considered they are all inert. That is why the spirituality or spiritual understanding has to be really improved by us. Why? Because what is outside, what is called creation, usually our mind with, associated with Chidabhasa, reflected consciousness, divides the whole universe into two categories, a living, non-living, the inorganic and the organic. But that is not the truth. A stone is not an inert thing. A stone is nothing but perceived by us as an inert matter by our mind. It is our division, the mischief of our mind. But truly speaking, everything in this universe is absolutely alive. Supposing a human being is analyzed. So first, this is the body, then these are the atoms, then these are the particles, then these are the pockets of energy. So the human language and understanding must come to an end. Naming something, this is the ultimate, what is called material, out of which the whole creation has come out or manifesting. That is all what we call the thought processes that take place in our mind. How do we know that this is the truth? What I am stating is the truth, because in the eyes of a Naira Brahman, like Ramana Maharshi, like Sri Ramakrishna, they see everything as alive. Even a speck of dust is most sacred. And in order to inculcate that tremendous spiritual truth into our muddy brains, they say, when you see your mother, your father, take the dust of their feet. So as soon as the dust is associated with them, it comes out alive. Of course, no need to say about the one's own guru. So a stone, when it is shaped in the form of a devata, immediately comes out alive. And a yantra, a diagram, immediately comes out alive. So you see, when a devotee of Shiva or Vishnu meditates upon Shivalinga or Saligrama, it is not an inert piece of stone, but really Narayana assuming, Shiva assuming those very particular formations. So where is the truth? This truth which we are speaking now has been taught by Swami Vivekananda to an ignorant king in Rajasthan. The king was audacious enough to ask Swamiji that we should not worship idols. Same problem came also with M, the chronicler of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna asked him, and in reply he said, I do not believe in image worship. In fact, he was daring enough to ask that people should be told not to worship idols, images. These are called, these people who do not only understand, but they think they understand, and they go on preaching. They are called iconoclasts, breakers of images. Why so many Muslim kings? Even today, Islam doesn't believe in images. Sri Ramakrishna had removed that wrong notion and said, why? It is the Divine Mother. It is, why do you say it is a lifeless being? Anything that is existing, sat, a stone is, the tree is, whatever of which we can say it is. And only when it is experienceable. And whenever we look at the tree, what is the first thing we experience? If I ask you, look at that. What is that you see? You say that I see a tree. But you are misplacing the words wrongly. You should say, I see an existent tree. I see an existent house. I see an existent man. A tree is, a man is, a stone is, a river is. That is called Sat. And that is the greatest truth. And is the Sat. Is it single or is it also always associated with Chit? According to Vedanta, Brahman is called Sat, Chit, Ananda. And these are not three. Where there is one, the other two also will be there invariably. But we do not see it. So, if you do not understand something, it doesn't mean your understanding is the right understanding. No. When a person advances spiritually, the same person, first he perceives Brahman. How does he perceive? In the form of, this is existent. This is existence. As soon as he understands this is existence, he doesn't separate. This is conscious and this is also blissful. No, he says it is nothing but Brahman. So a piece of stone is Brahman. A tree is Brahman. Both living and non-living, whatever exists, and ekam sat. We have analyzed this one in the Chandogya Upanishad in the 6th chapter beginning itself. Sadeva Soumya Idam Agra Asit Ekameva Advitiyam. Wherever we perceive easiness, we have to perceive consciousness, not little but full. So we never perceive full consciousness either in the waking state or in the dream state or even in the deep sleep state. Only a knower of Brahman, he perceives 100% Sat, 100% Chit, 100% Ananda, but it is only after obtaining the vision of Brahman, becoming one. Vision of Brahman means not seeing Brahman, but becoming one with the Brahman. Every time we concentrate upon something, it is truly speaking, trying to become one with the object of our thought. We become one with that thought. The duality, destruction of duality is called concentration. When concentration deepens, it is called meditation. When meditation deepens, it is called samadhi. So it's a gradual progress. Only a knower of Brahman, he doesn't see anything excepting Brahman. Brahman means Sat Chit Ananda. What is it that we share with the knower of Brahman? So, whereas a knower of Brahman sees Sat, Chit, Ananda as indivisible, whole, one, without a second, we divide it and say Sat into the with Chit, without Chit, with consciousness, without consciousness. And consciousness is in our vision, invariably associated with prana. So that which is living, that which is non-living. Both are existing. A stone exists but without life. But Swami Vivekananda questions this because he is aware of Brahman. Where do you put draw a line, say this is living and this is the non-living. So everything is Brahman. But this, what could Brahman be? What the real nature of Brahman can be? That is beautifully analyzed through this deep sleep example. As I was mentioning, you can see that Ajatashatru wanted to find out. When we are in the waking state, our mind is scattered terribly. So every second, our mind is drifting from one object to another object, which means from one thought of the object to another thought of another object. And there, tamoguna, tamas, that is ignorance, is very thick. Whereas when we enter into the dream state, it is vastly expanded. We feel that we are the masters of time, and albeit unconsciously. We can be anywhere within it is only a thought. I am here in Varanasi. That is a thought. I am on the planet Mars. That is another thought. How much time does it take for this mind to traverse between I am here and I am on the Mars? Not even a twinkling of a second. Man can be anything he wants. But that is the not only one. When two people enter into the deep sleep, here the example given is a Kumara, a small baby, a Maharaja, an emperor of vast empire, and a Mahabrahmana, a great learned Brahmin. When they enter, they attain equal status. There is no difference at all. A Brahmana doesn't think I am a Brahmana. This person is only a king, and this child is only a child, ignorant child. No, because there is no duality. Ekam Sat. There is only one pure, unbroken awareness of the existence. Existence is also becomes one, anantam, infinite existence, infinite consciousness, infinite bliss. So, as long as a person is in the deep sleep state, there is no difference. This is a tiger, it has come to eat me up. No, even if a person is caught by the tiger and it is slowly licking the person's body, the person is in great bliss because this is me and this is the tiger. That differentiation, that separateness is completely vanished. And along with the vanishment of the duality, all the effects of the duality will become completely erased. This is a marvelous thing that happens. So a poor man sleep, a rich man sleep, an old man, a small baby, an animal, a mosquito, a tree. Do trees sleep? Definitely they sleep. Wherever there is life, there is action. Life means action. Prana means activity. And where there is action, there is exhaustion. Where there is exhaustion, trees also rest. That is why Hindus believe that you should not go and do anything to any plant at night. Whatever you want to do, do it only at daytime. So, this is what this Ajatasatru wanted to, this is what we started discussing. I am taking time because this is the most sublime subject. For that, we have to develop certain spiritual qualities. And as we go on developing these qualities, then a person develops that special spiritual outlook of looking upon dualities, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, gain and loss, victory and defeat, happiness and unhappiness. He converts everything into one unbroken, pure bliss. And that is what we do, all of us, when we enter into deep sleep state. Even the person who is about to be executed, electrocuted, the moment he enters into deep sleep, he is absolutely free from any type of this. Not only that, not only is free from dualities, free from unhappiness, he is full of bliss until he wakes up. What a marvelous gift the divine creator has bestowed upon us. That is why a baby is so blissful. Until we teach, until its own samskaras wake up, then it becomes so lovely. So this is the qualities, spiritual qualities. What is a spiritual quality? That capability to perceive everything, not as reality, but perceiving everything as divine, accepting everything as divine, which leads this person to unbroken bliss. That is the purpose of developing these qualities. And who doesn't want it? Everybody wants only unbroken bliss. But due to the Mahamaya, power of illusion, ignorance, we are running like a musk deer which runs after its own fragrance, which is coming from its own navel, thinking that it is coming from somewhere else. Sri Ramakrishna illustrates through the example of a camel or a dog worrying a bone, etc. So, when a person attains to this state, I'll give you one living example. Both, I think, are living examples. One is a Zen story. A Zen master, and Zen Buddhism is nothing but Dhyana Buddhism. The word Dhyana or meditation has become corrupted when it went to Japan through China. Then it became Zen. Dhyana became Zen. Z-E-N. That's why it is called Zen Buddhism. And there were great enlightened monks in this tradition. And their stories are marvelous. So there was a Zen master. He can live anywhere. Wherever he lives is only Brahmaloka. We can say that. But even I would say Brahmananda Loka, not even Brahmaloka. So a Zen master was living. He was leading a pure life. His necessities were very little. And in that village, there was an unmarried girl who became pregnant. When her parents questioned her, she confessed. It was this Zen monk who was the father of the child. And the whole villagers who were revering this as a great man, seeing him, forgot the whole lot, came and bet him, abused him, and told him, "This is your baby, you will have to take care." So when the girl gave birth to the baby, they brought it and said, "You look after it. We don't want anything to do with this illegitimate child." And smilingly, with the most peaceful smile, joyful smile, the Zen master took upon himself. Now he started begging some milk also and started looking after the baby as if it was its own baby. Somehow, after some days, the girl could not stand her own deception. She confessed, "I falsely accused this monk." Oh no, let me put it, come to it later on. When the villagers brought the baby, the Zen monk accepted it cheerfully without contradicting what they were saying. He said, "Okay, I will look after it. This is God's dispensation." And he never cursed anybody. He never contradicted what they were saying. And he started looking after with all the love that is possible. The girl could not stand this truth. So one day she confessed to her parents, "It is actually a neighboring youth who is the father, real father of the baby. But in order to escape, then I have named only this helpless, hapless monk." The villagers understood. Immediately, they came down, profusely apologized to him, and then they asked the baby back. And cheerfully, the Zen master had handed over. With the same smile with which he received it, there is not a bit of pain, regret, accusation, nothing was there. What a marvelous story, that such an inspiring story. And there are so many inspiring stories like that. That is why to read the lives of great saints is very much wanted. So that was the story I promised to tell you. Now, let us proceed with that. So through this small story, this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, or rather Vedanta philosophy, through this dialogue between Ajatashatru and Gargiya, specifically focusing on the nature of Jivatma. What is the nature of the Jivatma? Because always knowledge proceeds from the known to the more known. I mentioned this one. These are profound truths. That's why I will repeat it. Supposing you go to an island where the people never knew what is called sweet, but they're accustomed a kind of vegetable grows there, which is bitter, like bitter gourd. But even this bitter gourd has different types of bitterness, much less bitterness and most bitterness when it is fully ripe, etc.
So if you want to convey to that person what a sweet really is like, you can't, any amount of description is not going to help. You have to convey the knowledge through what he already knows. That means you expand his already existing pool of knowledge. So you have to say that you bring some of these bitter fruits at various stages of their development. And then you ask, so which one do you prefer to eat? Because they have to eat. And then he prefers, I prefer this, it is tasty. Of course, anything that is eaten day after day becomes tasty only. It is a beautiful saying in Bengali, khete khete bhaloi lagche. As I go on eating, it is tasting better and better. That is our stupid psychology. Whatever food we are accustomed, that alone we think is the greatest food on earth. A baby doesn't know all these things until we teach them. That's why I give an illustration. Suppose there is a Bengali baby and he is taken to South India, into a pure South Indian family, and he is accustomed to all the South Indian dishes, and he grows up. One day he is brought back to Bengal and given Bengali dishes to taste, and his face becomes a little bit not sour. What type of food is this? Because we think that whatever I am accustomed is best, and my mother is the greatest cook. Anyway, this is child psychology. We are what our habits are. That's why samskara is called also habit. Now coming back, so this person who says this is the least bit of bitterness, now you see, people like it. They prefer. If you present different maturing bitter fruits, everybody rushes only to that type of fruit, which is much less bitter. And much less bitter is the sweetest according to them. Now you see, you are getting so much of joy. Now there is a sweet which will be a thousandfold more sweet than this. How do you convince him? Because he understands there must be something which is much better than what we know here. But even then that knowledge will be only a guess knowledge, intellectual knowledge, but not existential knowledge. So if you can bring a sweet fruit, like a sweet mango, and then present it to him, then he understands, oh, this is what you are talking about. So what is the important point I wanted to bring to your notice and make you understand and remember? That is very wonderful. Knowledge, higher knowledge is possible only through lower knowledge. That is why karma kanda is the lower knowledge. And with the help of the karma kanda, if it is done sincerely and properly, a man attains to the highest happiness. Every higher loka is a higher degree of happiness. And it is experienced by the mind as such. I'm just making it a little bit light. If somebody is taken to Brahmaloka and he is worried about his stock market, which he came before going to Brahmaloka, he thought that the price, is the stock value is going to crash. So many pandits had foretold there. So even if that person goes to Brahmaloka and if he starts worrying, what is going to happen to my stock price? Then is he in Brahmaloka or is he in a stock market world? We have to understand it is the state of mind. So higher knowledge means higher knowledge. Always associate higher knowledge with higher joy and less grief. And that should give a long food for our thought. So coming back, there are three states of every jivatma, the waking, the dream, and then deep sleep. So, what is wrong with this? waking state, dream state, the thickness of the ignorance is greatest in the waking, much less in dream, and far less in deep sleep state. Once a person is given, what is the cause of this incomparable bliss? Then we come to know, or the teacher explains, then we come to know. Intelligent persons come to know by their own thinking, because they have attained purity or intuition. As a Swami used to tell jokingly, until we develop intuition, we have to be in tuition. We have to accept a scripture, a guru, somebody who through their experience can teach us better. So in the, what happens in the waking state, the Chidabhasa, reflected consciousness, first becomes associated with the mind, then it becomes slowly associated with the sense organs, and these sense organs go out and take an impression, like dental impressions, and then presents it to the mind, and the mind analyzes it and creates knowledge, pieces of knowledge, which we call chitta vrittis. And we know all about the external world only through these chitta vrittis. We actually do not know anything about the external world. It is like watching a football match or a cricket on a monitor. However big the monitor, and first you are aware of the screen, then you forget everything and you are cavorting and shouting, dancing, or getting depressed according to the goals achieved by your favorite team or the team which is you do not support. But for the time being, we forget. Even though a little bit we are conscious that I am watching what is happening elsewhere, it is reflected on this monitor. If you can take and study this example, our mind is that monitor, our sense organs are the channels fed through these different wires, and then we, as if we are sitting there. This is what Shankaracharya has written beautifully in this Dakshinamurti Sutram. At the very beginning itself, Vishvam Darpana Drishyamana Nagari Tulyam Nijantargatam. The whole universe that we experience is like a man sitting near a window, and outside the window there is a 90-degree reflecting, beautiful reflecting mirror, and he is watching the whole external world as reflected in that mirror. And this is the greatest truth. We don't know, even the person, even if you think somebody is sitting next to me, I do not know anything about that person, excepting what thoughts I produce about that person. Is that all? No, even when I see my own body, I will not know anything about my body. Only the thoughts about my body, my mind has gathered, even though it says I am the body, feels I am the body, but it is the thoughts only. That is why mind alone is the cause of both happiness and unhappiness, of bondage and liberation, of good and evil. Everything depends upon the mind. Mind itself is the greatest Mahamaya, consisting of the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, and the more the sattva guna, or the more the tamo guna, our wrong knowledge is more, as we, that is like cleaning the mirror, as we go on cleaning our mind, then it becomes better and better, cleaner and cleaner, purer and purer, then we understand the truth much better way. This subject is beautifully discussed both in the 14th, 17th and 18th chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So this is what Ajatashatru really wanted to teach, that what is the jiva's nature? When the jiva is associated with the waking state, and then he acquires a name, he is called Vishva. or he is called waker. I am a waker. Then his knowledge of himself, because the whole world, here I am going to tell you the greatest truth. The world is like a mirror, and what we get, what reflection we get from the mirror depends upon what type of guna, tamo guna, rajo guna or sattva guna. So we judge the whole world through the gunas, and it also reflects us. That is why the world is the greatest aid. It helps us to find out who we are. If we observe fully awake, fully conscious, fully aware, and try to analyze, so why did I react to this person in this way? Why did I react to that other event in the another way? So how can I retain my happiness? Because this continuous reactions make me go up and down. So that reflecting process is a great improvement in spiritual life. Most people, unfortunately, are like a blind people, or they do some japam, they visit some holy places, and they worship regularly, they study scriptures regularly, but they are what we call usually in Vedanta, the six enemies, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, macharya, lust, anger, greed, envy, arrogance, jealousy. If they do not become lesser and lesser, then there is something seriously wrong with us. On the contrary, a person becomes more selfless. He becomes more and more unselfish. He is affected less and less by the events that happen and which must happen inevitably according to one's karma phala in this life. So, this is how man progresses. When a person gets a terrible blow, it is awake, arise, awake, and stop not till the goal is reached. So, uttishtata, jagrata. Then the Upanishad continues, prapya varan nibodhata. Oh, I am ignorant. I have to learn lot of things. So, let me approach somebody. Just like Gargi approached Ajatashatru. First he thought, I know everything. Then he understood, I know nothing. Then he became nothing. Then humility had come. Humility means to think, I am nothing. And then he approached Ajatashatru. Varan nibodhata. And then Ajatashatru recognized the sincerity of the student. He is a fit student. Made him fit actually. And then now he is teaching the final truth. So when this Jivatma withdraws from the external world, identifies with his own thoughts, all the impressions gathered from the waking state, not only in this life, Janma Janmantara, life after life, billions of lives together, then he starts analyzing himself. He becomes much freer, more happy, no doubt about it. And then Swami Vivekananda, he also sings that Tulsidas beautiful song is there. You have slept, O man, for billions of years. So take refuge at the feet of Rama, becomes a Sujana Jiva. Jagi Tyagi Mudhata Anuraga Srihare. So Jagi, become awake. Tyagi, give up this egotism. Anuraga Srihare. Then develop intense love for Srihari. Srihari means what? Brahman. Saguna Brahman. He is, Rama is both Saguna Brahma as well as Nirguna Brahma. No doubt about it. So this is the process Ajatashatru had adopted by calling names, said this person is not in the waking state. By gently touching and shaking, this person is not in the dream state. Then the only state he could be is the deep sleep state. And in that deep sleep state, it takes, because the person is blissful. Why does the person take such a long time? Because if a person is suffering, very easy to wake him up, because he is already almost awake. Because suffering makes a person remove him from happiness. Happiness means complete absorption, complete concentration, oneness with Brahman there, and as though it is a temporary phenomena. Ekam. All dualities have disappeared. Mind is not there. So, he doesn't want easily to come out of that state. Who wants to be separated from happiness? None of us. Separate a child from its favorite toy when it is playing that toy with that toy. Separate a young person with his beloved, from his beloved wife. Or separate a greedy merchant from his accumulated money. Because these are the venues of getting more happiness, mistakenly though. So a person doesn't want to be removed. Every person is eager to be removed from suffering. But this person is greatest bliss. That is why his body doesn't work. Sensors guns do not work. Mind also doesn't work. That is why calling by name, sounds, touching gently, nothing works. And nobody wants. It is the same condition. When we are in deep sleep, it is not easy to wake us up because we are unwilling to be woken up because nobody wants to be separated from Ananda. And Ananda is our own nature. And this is the highest truth. Our nature is Ananda, Satchidananda. And we never want to be separated from that Ananda. The whole life is meant, it is a quest for regaining this fullness, unbroken happiness, which is called Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. That infinite bliss, which transcends past, present and future, both the dualities and individuality. Nobody wants to be separated from there. That's why Sri Ramakrishna says, when a person enters into samadhi, then most of the people, they don't want to come back because they never found such great bliss in their lives. This word bliss is a very special word, should not be misplaced by using words like happiness, satisfaction, pleasure, etc., joy, etc. This is a unique word, bliss. That is called Ananda. So even the Anandamaya Kosha is only limited happiness because it changes. Why is it limited? Because it changes. So Anandamaya, we cannot live in the Anandamaya Kosha all the time. Anandamaya Kosha is equated with deep sleep because there is nothing but Ananda. There is not even that separate knowledge. I am the knower and this is something to be known. Those divisions are completely overcome in that state. But there is a mysterious karma which brings us down with a thud, like the mongoose whose tail is tied with a brick, suddenly falls to the ground, even though it doesn't want to come down. We all fall down. So we are moving from waking to dreamless, again to waking, and this Brahma Chakra, this wheel of Brahman is continuing, and until we wake up and know who we are, this will continue. So, Gargiya being a fit disciple, endowed with that keenness like Nachiketa, he must have understood it. And the further, in our future classes, we will discuss briefly about the other Brahmanas, but this is the essence. So, if you understand what we discussed yesterday and also today, you will understand what is the essence of this Ajatashatru Gargiya dialogue. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohoho. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.